Let's Help Each Other Get to Heaven, written by Mary-Kate Ellis, read by Jeffrey Buggy. It has always been said that opposites attract, and while this may be true in terms of our temperaments, it doesn't always seem so in regards to likes and dislikes of man and woman each. When considering modesty, it seems that we will attract someone modest if we are modest ourselves. For a young woman, she doesn't want to attract a man that will treat her badly. If she dresses cleanly and modestly, holds herself in with manner of grace, and behaves properly, she will likely attract a respectable, modest, polite man, and vice versa. When young Catholics are courting, it is to look for a potential spouse and not for a temporary fling, as is common in the secular world, specifically amongst teenagers. There is no seriousness in their relationships. They will not last, and they are typically the result of unruly passions. We can see in Catholic marriages a true bond, devotion, care for each other. The parents must work as a team, because the formation of the souls of their young children depends on them. They have true, heavy responsibilities in the bringing up of the young in the true faith. Now let's help each other get to heaven. This is what servant of God, Emperor Charles of Austria, is quoted as having said to his wife, Zita of Bourbon Parma. A Catholic marriage should lead to heaven with God as the centerpiece and head of the relationship and family. This good emperor, Carl Maria, understood this. Born August 17, 1887, Persenbeg Castle, Charles was raised by a pious mother and a rather playful father. His father was Archduke Otto, his mother the Princess Maria Josepha of Saxony. She instilled in the young royal a great love of the Sacred Heart and of the Holy Mass, and also strove to teach him very strictly of charity. It is related that on a trip outside of the palace, a young Charles saw a poor beggar. Having never seen someone in such a state before, he was very moved. Out of an act of charity, motivated by his childlike innocence, he begged his mother for a small plot of land between the palace, and he grew there a garden of fresh fruits and vegetables. He sold these to the grown-ups in the palace, and saved his money from this little endeavor in order to give it to the poor. He was always noted as having been a sensitive child, but quite astute. As he grew older, he became a quite charming young Austrian and a quick favorite of his great-uncle, the Emperor. He was known for greeting all of the visitors to the palace and personally showing them around, for his quick wit and for his pious zeal. Charles would fast from midnight until he was able to receive the Blessed Sacrament at Mass the following day, no matter what time it was or how long he had to wait, and he was accustomed to daily Mass. It might be worth noting that the boy was not ever meant to be the emperor. Charles was simply too far down the royal line, and he had been content to tend to his soul as if his soul was his kingdom. Unfortunately, through a series of tragic events, he would eventually be crowned. Before his coronation, he met Princess Zita of Bourbon Parma. She was a beautiful, young Italian princess raised in a monastery by her grandmother. Her father was, too, a pious man, and she briefly considered entering the convent after several of her older sisters before she met young Charles. They had been raised in the same family circles, and had seen each other from time to time, but it was at a ball that they truly began to develop a friendship that would turn into a lasting love. They shared a dance and then another, and after some short conversation, Charles knew that he would marry her one day. At the age of 19, and in a state of utter panic, this little blonde archduke came begging to see his grandmother. In this very frazzled state, he begged her to tell him that it was not true that Zita was engaged to the Prince of Spain, a rumor that had finally caught up to him. "No," his grandmother laughingly replied to him, his expression smoothed, and he brushed back his well-kept blonde hair. "Well, I had better hurry," he said in response, or else she really will get engaged to someone else. They were happily married at Schloss Schwarzau Castle, and soon had their first son, Otto. Otto would be the first of 8 children between Charles and Zita. Soon after this, Charles was crowned emperor. It came as a shock to him, a message delivered in the middle of the night, and during a difficult time, politically, for Austria and Hungary. He had to fight to be crowned as the king of Hungary, though he was generally accepted by the Austrian people. He went out of his way to preserve peace, and was both gentle and firm in his rule. Charles never would have accepted leaving Austria had the gentle persuasion of a priest and friend not finally convinced him. During his reign, political upheaval struck, and Charles was forced to run Austria from a Swiss castle and in exile. Zita noted that by the time he had turned 30, he had no blonde hair left. He was under such prolonged periods of stress that all of his hair had turned gray. Even from this initial exile, he worked 16 to 20 hours a day, and he personally saw to the Catholic education of his children, and made sure they all went to daily mass. He stressed modesty and charity to them all, and wanted them to understand that there were many people less fortunate than them. Before the birth of their last child, Charles and Zita were again uprooted to be taken to their final place of exile. They had no belongings with them, no money, not even a change of clothes. Crowds of Austrian loyalists gathered along the coast with tears in their eyes to bid their beloved emperor and empress a final farewell, as Charles and his wife and children were escorted to Madeira by the British Royal Navy. The British were not fond of Charles for his peacekeeping efforts during the First World War and in the aftermath of it. On Madeira Island, the large family lived in a one-room apartment. They were destitute but happy. They received the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass daily in their poor home, and that was the delight of Charles' life. He fell ill shortly after moving there. He was in constant and severe pain and began to struggle breathing. Then he was brought the last rites. At this time, he called in his son Otto to watch, and the day after, Zita recalls him having said, "I would like to have him spared all of that yesterday. But I had to call him to show the example. He has to know how one conducts himself like this, as a Catholic and an emperor." He patiently accepted his sufferings and poverty. Once the emperor, he now had not enough money to afford the medicine that was required to cure him. He was like the poor men he would give coin to on the street as a little boy, though he was heard having said how glad he was to suffer, for he longed for his people to be one again, and for the political tumult to end. Before he died, he turned to his wife, in an agonized and tearful voice. He asked her why they simply would not let his family go home. But even then, he seemed aware that a different path was prepared for him, and that he would not live to see his beloved Austria. He publicly forgave his enemies and those that wished him harm, and then he looked at his wife in a moment of clarity. He begged her to go to King Alfonso of Spain after his death, that he would help and protect her and their children. He knew he would not be there for her longer. "He is chivalrous," Charles rasped. "He has promised me that he will take care of you." His final hour was drawing nearer then. He listed each of his children by name and grasped a crucifix, pleading with God to help and protect his little ones. On April 1st of 1922, he was 34 years of age. He was properly exhausted and seemed to have no breath left in his body. He called for Otto, who came into the room with a face full of tears and knelt beside the little, uncomfortable bed. Zita held a cross before Charles's face, and he looked at her. The last words he ever spoke to Zita were, "I love you so much." Then he looked back to our crucified Lord, and his face grew pale. He did not even have strength to kiss the crucifix. "Thy will be done. Yes, yes, as you will it, Jesus." He cried out, and then he expired. Zita took the children to Spain with her, and there relates an interesting exchange with King Alfonso. Neither Zita nor Alfonso had seen each other in at least 3 years, and were both astonished that Charles had thought of him. And the night before the death of Charles, she related, Alfonso said he was overcome with a feeling that if he did not take in Charles' widow and children under his protection, his own wife and children would suffer one day the same fate. He was overcome with emotion when I told him that Charles had said that he would protect me and our children. Zita never remarried. Both of these holy monarchs were gentle and pious individuals, and a wonderful example of a good Catholic marriage. With God first and foremost in their lives, they had that peace that some of us currently only dream of. With Charles as the mind and Zita as the heart, they ruled their countries to the best of their abilities and raised their children with great love and raised them to love God. Ah, a good Catholic family. To imitate the Blessed Virgin and Saint Joseph. It is not an impossible task. God gives us the means to excel in our vocations if we would but ask Him for help and rely on Him as a sick man relies on a crutch. In Charles's final moments, he turned his eyes to God with what little strength he had left. If only we would turn to God in our weakest moments. When temptation assails us, when sickness takes over, when we feel hopeless, we must turn our eyes to God. God is the eternal remedy, the doctor of the sick, balm of the soul. And to all good Catholic parents, spouses, allow God to be the king of your family, the center of your marriage. Now we must help each other get to heaven, the servant of God softly declared. Indeed, indeed, help each other get to heaven.